Welcome to All Sides. I'm Amy Jurevich. This is 89.7 NPR News. The pandemic revealed companies could still function with many employees working remotely. Many employees benefited from not having to commute and achieving a better work-life balance. However, those days could be coming to an end as some companies are instituting return-to-office mandates. We are talking about returning to the office this hour. Emma Harrington is an economics professor at the University of Virginia who researches remote work. Emma, welcome to All Sides.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for being here. Take us back. How, in the past four-ish years, has hybrid and remote work changed the workplace?
I mean, it's really been one of the biggest changes that we've seen in the world of work, arguably since the world wars and the rise of women in the workforce. It's just a seismic shift in where people do their work. Prior to the pandemic, working from home was really an exception. It was, for most estimates, less than 10% of workers were working from home in any sizable capacity. During the pandemic, that skyrocketed, and basically everyone who could work from home was doing so. And since then, we've seen some return to the office, but it seems like we're leveling out at a point with much more remote work than we saw pre-pandemic.
And have you looked at, the idea of fully remote versus hybrid? Have you seen a change where people who were fully remote are slowly, like, it's one day in the office, then it's 2 days, then it's 3 days?
Yeah, it seems like there's been a lot of convergence towards more of a hybrid model where there's 2 or 3 or sometimes 4 days in the office and more sporadic remote work. So you can still get some of the benefits of collaboration while having some of the flexibility and other benefits of working from home.
Now, in recent months, we're seeing more and more stories about companies demanding that their employees return to the office more often. You're seeing some companies, Amazon isn't a good example at their headquarters, and then Starbucks for their employees who work in like the headquarters office are asking their employees to come back full time, 5 days a week. Why is that happening now?
I think there's a variety of factors there. So, I mean, the labor market as a whole is cooling off a little bit, particularly for things like tech and the corporate sector more broadly. And so some people have theorized that basically it's a lot cheaper to have people quit than lay people off. And so if you have a big return to office and then some people decide then to quit, that's a way to reduce headcount in a way that is cheaper than laying people off and then having to pay them severance.
So that sounds like a hidden agenda behind the return to work mandates. So it's that the companies maybe are having trouble making ends meet and they were like, oh, it'd be nice if we had less people. Is that what's happening?
I think that that's probably part of it. I think that there is also some evidence that when people are together, they're a little bit more creative. There's a little bit more mentorship that happens. And so that could also be one of the driving forces back to the office, especially now that like innovation is so important to some of these companies, as AI is heating up and everyone wants to be sort of at that frontier.
The big one that was in the news last week is Amazon. They called it's 50,000 workers. They called them back to their headquarters in Seattle. Now, they already were requiring them to come to work 3 days a week. So you can assume most of them lived in the Seattle area, I would guess. But there are some companies that maybe let people work remotely fully, and maybe people don't live in that city. They moved. Have you seen that in your research?
Yeah. And even when you think about hybrid, basically people are living in the Seattle area, for example, who are hybrid at Amazon, but people are just willing to do much longer commutes if they only have to go into the office 3 days a week. And so what you see in general throughout the entire U.S. is that there's just been this expansion of the radius in which firms are hiring. And so if they do a return to office, that may cause some people to leave who have a commute of like an hour or two, which was doable 3 days a week, but is really not doable every day.
Now,
I have seen research that can prove both sides. I've seen research that says that allowing people to work remotely improves productivity. And I've seen research that says if you make people come into the office, it increases productivity, which is true.
I mean, I guess that this is the sort of classic economist answer of like, there's always two sides. There's sort of the cliche that
You're going
no
to tell me
economist has just
it
one
depends,
hand.
right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think my research at the very least suggests it really depends on how you're defining productivity. So oftentimes, if you're looking at productivity here and now, people are really productive working from home because they can just go home, put their heads down, and just crank out some work. But if you're really focused on mentorship and some of the maybe more long-term ingredients into productivity, then being in the office at least part of the time is pretty important. That people just are much less likely to give each other feedback and really invest in each other's careers when they're working from home. And so that part of it may be part of the reason why some of these firms want to go back.
So, yeah, I guess if they're productive in both places on different times, it's just kind of interesting because it's like I think it can be both. And it's one of those things where it can be both at the same time where you are productive at home. If you have a day where you need to just like put information into a spreadsheet all day. Like, why come into the office and sit in your cubicle and be, you know? So I guess that's where the flexibility part comes in. So I get but it's hard to track people when they're being flexible. Are companies seeing an issue with trying to track people and make sure they actually are doing work?
Yeah, I mean, I think a tough thing about hybrid is that, I mean, to get any benefits of being in the office, you need your colleagues to also be in there. So just sort of like you're saying, like if you're just putting stuff in a spreadsheet, you don't need to be sitting in a cubicle. You also don't need to be sitting in a cubicle if like the rest of the cubicles in the office are empty. And so a challenge that firms have found in hybrid work is making sure that like if I'm going in on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, then my teammates are also going in Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and not sort of going in Monday and Friday, and so we never see each other. And so that is sort of like a sort of tension that loses some of the benefits of flexibility of work from home if you're mandating particular days to be in the office versus not. But that's sort of the only way to get some of the benefits in terms of collaboration.
And in your research, have you done any looking at the fairness issue? There are jobs where you can't work remotely. And sometimes, you know, I work here at a radio station. There are certain jobs, mine, I have to be in the radio studio. My board operator, Cameron, he needs to be in the studio to push the buttons, right? And he's monitoring all the levels and he has to be here to do that. That's not something that can be done at home. So what about the idea? Have you heard in your research about fairness and people just, you know, like I chose this job, so I know what I'm getting into. What have you heard about fairness?
Yeah, I've heard a lot of anecdotal accounts. I haven't seen that much that's systematic about it, but it definitely seems to be the case that you could imagine that there's some amount of tension between people who are quote unquote remotable, who can work from home, and those people who are kind of stuck in the office because their job just simply can't be done from home. I mean, one way to think about it that might make it more concrete is that studies suggest that being able to work from home, people value that at about 8% of their income. So that if you're thinking about someone who makes 100K a year, that's like 8K of additional extra benefit that they get when they can work from home. And so it is.
Explain that to me more. So they are saying that like working from home is equivalent to an 8% salary increase to them mentally? Is
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's sort of the average. Some people it's much more beneficial, some less. But on average, people, if they're presented with a job that would pay them $108,000 versus $100,000, and the $100,000 job lets them work from home, a lot of people are going to choose the lower paying job that lets them work from home.
Hmm. But you can factor in, or do you think people are thinking about gas money and the cost of parking whenever they're thinking about that too? Or is it all a mental load thing?
I would guess a chunk of it would be the direct cost, that's part of the difference. But I think a lot of it is just that, like, working from home is nice. Like, you get that time back that you would otherwise be spending commuting. Maybe you can do a little bit of multitasking, put some laundry in, take the dog out, that sort of thing. And so if you think about it as this really valuable amenity that some people are getting and some people aren't getting, to go back to your point about sort of this unfairness piece, that it sort of makes sense that it could create some tension when some people in an office have just gotten basically the equivalent of an 8% pay bump and other people have not. And so it is a pretty big divide there.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to put some thought into that. Like, what percentage of my pay is it worth it to get to put a load of laundry in the middle of the day? That's what's the
Yeah, a
yeah.
worthwhile thing to ask yourself, especially if you're thinking about searching for jobs.
We are talking about remote work with Emma Harrington, an economics professor at the University of Virginia who researches remote work. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. Listeners, if you have been working remotely, is your employer asking you to come back to the office more often, full time? Give us a call. Tell us your story. 614-292-8513. That's 614-292-8513. Or send us an email at allsides@wosu.org. And one thing that happened a lot, especially in 2020, 2021, is that remote work led to a lot of businesses shutting down. Not big businesses themselves, but like businesses that relied on workers coming into the office. You know, downtown restaurants, stores that were in the middle of the downtown lost all of their lunchtime crowds. So have you heard municipalities and cities support these return to office mandates that are happening?
Yeah, I mean, it has been pretty difficult for urban centers to have people working from home, because then you have a lot of economic activity move out to the suburbs because people are, one, moving further away from city centers, and then, two, they're also doing a lot of more consumption activities in the suburbs rather than in the downtowns. And that equation is just pretty tough. Some economists have even talked about it as this urban doom loop, that basically you see a lot of resources leave these urban centers. Then it's really difficult to invest in urban centers. And as a result, the urban centers become even less attractive as a potential destination. And so you can get this sort of downward potential cycle. So I think from a local government's perspective, it could be pretty attractive to try to have and support these return to office mandates.
I've heard a lot of buzzwords about remote work, but urban doom loop, that is a new one for me.
Yeah, it's a particularly sort of dreary one.
Yeah, is that yours, or is that just an economic term that's well known that I don't know?
I unfortunately did not coin that particular turn of phrase.
So, what does you know, how does compensation play a role into this return to work? If you're asking your employees to come back into the office 5 days a week when you've been allowing them to work from home 2 or 3 days, are companies paying them a little more for gas or for parking?
I think it would make sense for them to do that. I mean, I think that some companies, sort of circling back to something we talked about earlier, is that like some of the companies may be trying to do this as a way to sort of reduce effective compensation, that people really don't like to see their take-home pay decline. And this is the way to maybe make their effective compensation decline some if you were to have them return to the office and you don't have a commensurate increase in pay. So I would guess you'll see a lot of that happening, that people will feel as though they've had a bit of a pay cut when their office does one of these return to office mandates.
Have you heard about companies allowing, so if they're having more return to office 5 days a week, but maybe they still allow flexibility? Like, you can come in at 10 to avoid the heart of rush hour. You can leave at 4 to get your kid off the bus, or I guess that would be at 3, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, anecdotally, that seems right. I mean, I think also just the experience with remote work that we've had over the past few years has just really changed employees' expectations about what level of flexibility is reasonable. That I think that there's also just a feeling that it is pretty unreasonable for employees to, or for employers, excuse me, to say that you can't have the day off and to work from home if you have a doctor's appointment or if your kid is sick. And so there's just more of this expectation that even if we have this return to office, we're going to have a little bit more flexibility to take a day here and there to work from home.
And listeners, if you have been working remotely, is your employer requiring you to return to the office? Give us a call. Tell us your story or your experience. Maybe working remotely has just changed your outlook on work. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or send us an email to allsides@wosu.org. Coming up, we're going to talk about coffee badging and quiet quitting, what it means when you return to the office, but maybe not fully, maybe not mentally return to the office. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News. You're listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich. While the pandemic made it necessary for some people to work remotely from home, those days could be coming to an end. Companies are instituting return-to-work mandates, which are not sitting well with some employees, who were happy to ditch their commutes and office clothes to stay home and perhaps work in their pajamas. We're talking about how returning to the office and those mandates are impacting companies and employees this hour. Still with us is Emma Harrington, an economics professor at the University of Virginia who researches remote work. And listeners, if you have been working remotely, is your employer asking you to come back to the office? Or has that caused you to consider changing jobs? Give us a call. Tell us your story. 614-292-8513, or send us an email at allsides@wosu.org. So, Emma, related to all of that, these return-to-work mandates, are you seeing more people quitting? Do you have any data showing that people are changing jobs?
Other researchers have looked at LinkedIn data and other sorts of online resume data to get a sense of what happens when a company has one of these big return to office mandates. And what they see is that particularly more tenured workers who have been at companies longer, they tend to exit disproportionately when you have one of these return to office mandates.
And wait, so maybe wait, people who have been there longer.
Yeah.
Really?
Okay. Maybe really know the ropes and were maybe particularly effective working from home. Mm. These are people who also might be more likely to have family responsibilities and other things that make a return to office particularly costly. And so those are the people that are disproportionately the ones who leave when you have one of these return to office mandates. So you may not see sort of an exodus overall, but you might think of these people who have a lot of firm-specific skills who might be really costly for these employers to lose. They are often the ones who sort of take the side door exit when they're asked to return to the office. Mm.
Now, big companies like Amazon and Starbucks, we mentioned earlier, UPS, Boeing, JPMorgan Chase, they've all made headlines with their returned to office mandates. But a study shows that still 82% of the Fortune 500 companies out there offer flexible work, and only 18% are requiring full-time in-office work. So 18% is a significant portion, but it seems kind of low. Do you think that number will keep increasing?
I think it'll keep increasing some, especially as some firms sort of follow the lead of these sort of giants like Amazon. I think it's really useful to keep those numbers in the back of your mind, though, because it's really easy to look at a bunch of headlines and get the gestalt feeling that everyone is going back to the office, because that's sort of what makes the news. It makes the news when Amazon or Starbucks returns to the office, and it's less sort of salient. All of these companies like Google and Meta, et cetera, who have continued to offer hybrid work. And that is more the norm, that, like, exactly as you're saying, the plurality of firms in the Fortune 500 are still offering some degree of locational flexibility.
And what about, I was reading even CEOs. There's a lot of CEOs out there who've gotten hired in the past 4 years who don't live in the same place as this company that hired them, and they got the job because remote work was becoming more standard. But now, if there's an in-office mandate and your CEO lives in another state, how is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, there's a really great paper that sort of shows that when you have one of these remote CEOs who themselves doesn't live near headquarters, the earnings of the company tend to be a bit lower. And so you can imagine lots of mechanisms for that. I mean, one could be that just people are kind of angry if they see pictures of their CEO on a yacht or whatever while they're having a return to office mandate. The sort of cognitive dissonance of that is pretty salient.
And I did also read that some of these return to office mandates are a way CEOs are showing their shareholders, like, I'm doing something. I'm trying to change things. I see the numbers. Let's, this is a it's a show to make a big change.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I think also remote work requires a different type of management, I think, often, where you need to be more focused on what people's outputs are as opposed to necessarily monitoring their inputs. And I think it's just like a really human tendency when things aren't going that well that you kind of want to be able to micromanage the inputs into production in a different way. And so I think that that may be part of why you do see some correlation that, like, when firms have a bad sort of quarter or couple of quarters, you're a little bit more likely to see them then decide to have one of these return to office mandates.
What if they do a return to office mandate and then they have two or three more bad quarters after that? Then are they going to send everyone home?
We don't see that quite as much, but I mean, that would be a reasonable response.
So some employees have found a way to check in at the office but still work at home. Have you heard of the practice coffee badging?
I have.
Yeah, can you explain that to our listeners?
Yeah, so the idea with this is that if your employer is requiring you to be in the office for X days a week, and you really don't want to be in the office X days a week, but they're tracking that information and they're tying your pay and performance reviews to that information. One workaround is that you can go into the office, badge in, grab a coffee, and then head on home, and you're getting credit for that time, but you're not actually spending much time in the office. And so it's a real workaround to these mandates that a lot of employees find pretty upsetting.
I find it not probable that people are admitting that they're doing this, right? So I don't think do you have any data that like says the number of people, the percentage of people, or the increase doing this, or is it just all like hyperbole?
Yeah, I have only really seen anecdotes. I mean, there are apparently people who even hire other people to do the badging for them. So,
Oh.
like,
Like
you
an
can use
Uber or
Uber Eats,
a DoorDash
basically.
driver. Like, will you go take this card and swipe in for me? And then, okay.
Yeah.
Well, how are companies cracking down on this practice? I mean, I'm sure in this day and age with technology, if you have a company-owned laptop, they can see where the laptop is located, right?
Yeah, and I think some companies may also do more to try to get at, like, time of badges. Like, are you just badging in and badging out, or are you actually spending some reasonable amount of time in the office? I think all of these do have some tension of people just don't really like to be tracked. That just feels kind of big brothery to them. And so I think employers run some risk when they do this sort of thing, that sure, they may get more office attendance, but it might have bad impacts on employee morale and other things.
Another thing that's happening a lot is quiet quitting. That went viral during the pandemic. Is that still a workplace trend where people are basically they're coming in and they're just doing the bare minimum?
I mean, I think that probably the return to office in part may be motivated by worries about things like quiet quitting. It is a little harder to quietly quit when you have to commute to the office and then you have to sit there. And if you're in an open office plan, people can potentially see what you're doing on your laptop. It's just going to be a little harder to fully check out if you're in the office. I think some of the quiet quitting fears, my guess is that they're probably overblown, that there's sort of some colorful anecdotes, and that ends up sort of coloring people's feelings about things. But yeah, I think it's still probably something that probably was always happening in the workforce, but became more salient during the pandemic.
Have you studied job hopping? Is there more people staying at jobs for less, like, because, baby boomers stayed at the same job for all 40 years of their career, but that's now now people are moving around and changing jobs maybe after like 1 year or 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, you have seen a lot of job hopping, and I think remote work makes that a little easier, that you don't necessarily have to physically relocate for a job. And so it would be easier to try it out for a year or two and then switch to something else. And I think that that is also something employers are worried about, that they don't necessarily want all this job hopping. And so that is one of the appeals of having people geographically tied to their employment relationship with the firm.
Do you think that it's just something employers have to get used to now? If they've spent the past 30 years with people who just stick around for a long time, they just have to get used to the fact that maybe you're hiring someone and you're putting the investment into them and they might only stay 2 years, right? Is that just the new reality?
Yeah, I think some of that may be just the reality we're currently in. I mean, I think also things like AI, that could be something that is really beneficial for easing the transition across jobs, that these sorts of tools might be really helpful in having people be able to ramp up faster, because it can basically transmit a lot of the firm-specific skills and knowledge you need to do your job and get you up to speed a little faster.
Quicken the onboarding process. Yeah. What are your thoughts since you research remote work? When deciding if you have a new position and deciding if it's going to be a full in-office position or if it's going to be a remote position, do companies tend to think about the position or do they think about the person, what the person needs? Which one is more important?
I mean, I think that there's this overall dichotomy that there are some jobs that just can't be done from home and some that can. And so that's going to be sort of the biggest driver. I think among the jobs that can be done from home, those person-specific considerations are really important. So you see some firms like Meta came out relatively early on and said, we particularly want young people and people who are new to our company to be back in the office. Because for them, the mentorship piece that you get when you're sort of at the same table and you're around the same water cooler, those are going to be really important for people who have a lot to learn about the job. Whereas maybe for some more senior people, it's sort of more okay for them to be at home.
What if you're that young person and all the senior people are at home, like even if it's just half the time, but you're a young person and you're there full time? That I don't think that that doesn't quite work.
I mean, I totally agree
Yeah.
that that's like a tough thing about that sort of policy, and maybe why some firms are like, if we want the junior people to be trained, we need everyone to be back in the office, not just them. I mean, I think that there is quite a bit of learning that young people and junior people do from one another. So it's not totally crazy to just have them back in. But I totally take your point that only having them back in and having none of their mentors back in doesn't fully solve the problem.
Yeah. And well, what about the idea that the young people are in the, oh, that's what I wanted to ask. What about the idea that if there's someone where their job can be fully remote, but they want to interact with people, they want to be in the office, they're a people person. I mean, that's the opposite kind of flexibility. And most of the time when you think about flexibility and working from home, it's because you think people want to be in their pajamas doing laundry. But what if someone wants the interaction?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a tough thing. I mean, something that's kind of interesting that we see in data on like who's going into the office based on who's badging in is that people who aren't married are more likely to go into the office in sort of a hybrid policy. And so people in general who maybe don't have quite as much at home in terms of someone always there to do the laundry with them or whatever, they may be more inclined to go back to the office. And then it's harder for them if other people are not also doing that. So I think something that we may see is that firms end up being more just in different paths. So you have like an Amazon and you have a Microsoft. And Microsoft has a lot more locational flexibility as we traditionally think about it. And Amazon is more office-based. And people who really want to be in the office and have social time in the office, they're going to choose Amazon instead of Microsoft. And people who really want to work from home more regularly, they're going to opt in to Microsoft. And so I think you will just see companies having more divergence in their cultures around this.
And that culture will be explained in the job description whenever you go to apply, like that kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we have about a minute left. And can you tell me what, since you research remote work, what are you looking at next? What are you going to be focusing on in the coming months and years?
I mean, I think something that we're really interested in is thinking about how remote work impacts people's mental health and psychological well-being. That a lot of anecdotal evidence is that people find it helpful in terms of managing work-life balance. But at the same time, you could imagine if you're working from home, maybe it's easier to also end up socializing alone and doing just a lot of your workday by yourself, and then even after your workday by yourself. So it could have also some detrimental impacts on mental health and well-being. So I think that's a really interesting area of future work.
All right. Well, if you do a paper on that, you'll come back and tell us about it.
That sounds great.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. That was Emma Harrington, an economics professor at the University of Virginia who researches remote work. Thank you, Emma, for joining us for All Sides today.
Thanks so much.
And coming up, a New York Times essayist will talk about how hybrid work is becoming another example of class division. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News. You're listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich. There are many benefits to working from home. No commutes, no worries about being distracted by noisy coworkers in an open office space. But unfortunately, remote work, much like higher salaries, could become a perk for the rich. In an essay for the New York Times, writer Rachel Greenlee chronicled how remote work exemplifies the economic divide between workers and their bosses. Rachel Greenlee, welcome to All Sides.
Thanks for having me, Amy. It's good to be here.
Now, the headline of your essay says that remote work is increasingly a right of the rich. Can you explain that?
Yeah, absolutely. This absolutely came from a remote work conference at Stanford University back in October, where presentation after presentation showed that there's an increasing disparity between who gets to work remotely. So some of the data points that came out of that was showing post-pandemic how the number of days people are allowed to work from home correlates to their income. And there was even a correlation found that the further that you live from the office, the more salary you likely make.
Hmm. So tell me more about that. So if you live further away, you're making more. Does that include like living in a different city, or it's just you're making more and you don't have to commute?
It really comes down to the fact that people who are in positions not in the C-suite don't have the flexibility. So they need to be closer to the office in driving distance from the office versus you have more flexibility in the C-suite and can live in fact, other states. One data point that wasn't in the essay, and this came from a study of remote CEOs, found that 15% of remote CEOs live on oceanfront locales. And there is a high propensity of CEOs who choose to live in states with low income tax and low capital gain tax as well.
You also cited that some of these CEOs who live oceanfront, but their headquarters is not oceanfront, are using company jets to show up and make in-person appearances.
Yeah, that's definitely the case for the new Starbucks CEO, Brian Nichol. Under the terms of his agreement when he was hired at Starbucks back in September, he was able to stay in his home at Newport Beach in California, and he has the use of a company jet to come into the office. Now, the Starbucks mandate just started it this January, and employees have to be in 3 days a week. You know, I used to work at Starbucks. I used to work at Amazon. So I know a lot of people personally impacted by this. And it doesn't seem like that big of a deal to have to be in the office 3 days a week. But when you live 2 hours from headquarters, and so that is a 4 hour commute a day, imagine that time on the road versus actually being effective at home.
Yeah. Yeah. And the Starbucks CEO. So if Starbucks employees are required to be in the headquarters 3 days a week, is the Starbucks CEO flying there and for 3 days and then flying back to where he lives?
Yeah, presumably.
remains to be seen. Yes.
Yeah. 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 I mean, the press folks at Starbucks, of course, say that he is in the office 3 days a week and in a CEO position, particularly for a retailer with stores all around the world. There is an expectation that when he's not in the office, he's on the road traveling. But I think when you look at that research, particularly the component about CEOs, and they studied 900 remote CEOs and found that their job performance and company performance was definitely less than on-premise CEOs. So, and they attributed that to a few things. One was sort of having a short-termism outlook because their life was elsewhere than where the company headquarters was. And also being more involved in their local community. And because of that beachfront locale, having things like boats and partaking in the area where they lived versus the area where their headquarters is. So I think that's the concern. It's not as much how many days necessarily the CEO is in the office, but whether they are committed to the locale in which their company and most of their people that are working for them are located.
Whenever you were writing your piece, did you look into how things with remote work break down along gender or racial lines?
So I don't have a lot of data on racial lines, but I think on gender, definitely remote work helps. Any caregivers of any gender, but caregivers tend to be more women, the data shows, even though that is evolving. I think the other thing that was really important that came out of that research is that I found that 22% of people with a disability work increased, work opportunities increased by 22% for people with a disability over the pandemic. And so that goes to show that when there are opportunities for people to work from home, more people can work from home, whether with disabilities, genders, different races. And so we don't have the data to show how that has changed, but I'm certainly hoping if some of those individuals who were able to find employment during the pandemic work for these companies who are demanding that their workers come back to the office, that they were able to get exceptions.
Yeah, so in recent years, we're seeing more people who consider themselves caregivers, but they also want a job. People with disabilities, they are able to work from home because that fits their lifestyle. So if there was a mandate to come into the office 3 days a week, that might not work for them. If this change happens, they might have to look for another job.
Yeah, absolutely. There's, I wasn't able to go into too many details on people that I personally know because I didn't want to put them at risk. A lot of people who have asked for exceptions at the companies that currently have the mandate to come back to work, like Amazon and Starbucks, those exceptions are going all the way to the C-suite. And exceptions might be asked for because they're 2 hours from the office. Exceptions might be asked for because they're a single mother with a child with a handicap issue. It doesn't mean that you can't be a high-performing employee if your circumstances are better to be able to work from home.
We're talking with Rachel Greenlee, who wrote an essay for the New York Times called Packed Cubicles, an Empty Corner Office: Remote Work is Increasingly a Right of the Rich. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. So when you were deciding to write this essay, you said that you've worked at both Starbucks and Amazon, you have connections. You just mentioned all like people applying for exemptions. Do you know if they're being granted, or is that it's too early to tell because it's some of these mandates are pretty new?
Yeah, it's too early to tell. I actually checked in last week with a friend who is waiting to hear about her exemption, and she has not heard yet. I was particularly surprised to hear that at Amazon, the exceptions have to be made all the way near the top to one of the direct reports of the CEO, which is a certainly a question of is that an efficient approach? Amazon is really interesting in this because while Starbucks is going back to 3 days a week, Amazon has said 5 days a week. And I think what's interesting about this is it is such a data-driven company. I mean, having worked there, you had to know the 100th line down in a data report to be able to validate a business position. And in this case, they're not making this decision with data. One research report that was done by Nick Bloom of Stanford University talks about a A/B test that was done at Trip.com, where the A group worked 5 days a week in the office, the B group worked a hybrid schedule. And what they found were two things. One, there was no difference in productivity or performance between those two groups. But two, there was a huge difference between the satisfaction of the employees, and there was better attrition, and particularly better attrition rates with female employees.
Okay. Well, what do you think of whenever you think of these return to office mandates, if there is it, whether they should be position specific or person specific? Because, a big company like Amazon has to have data analyst one, data analyst two, three, four, maybe a couple of those people who are analysts like being in the office. They want the socialization, but then others would prefer to be at home. Do you think that companies as big like that can make it a position or a person consideration?
I think it's all about flexibility, right? Like the pandemic changed the way we work, and companies need to accept that. And particularly when we see that, some of this research that shows that companies made these decisions after a poor financial performance, which gives one the idea that perhaps this is an indication to the market versus something that's actually for productivity of their work, then you really have to ask, is this for altruistic reasons or only for financial reasons? And with respect to the position or the person, again, I think you have to be flexible. I don't think it's black or white. I have college age kids. I want them to have the experience of working with other people in person, wherever it is they choose to work. However, that doesn't mean that there can't be flexibility too. And that's why at the end of the day, there were two things that really landed on me after doing this essay. And one was that a hybrid work schedule should be allowed. Everybody needs that flexibility in their life, and the data shows that it makes them a better worker. And number two, to have a different set of rules for the C-suite versus the everyday worker is just creating a greater inequity.
So, hybrid for all and same rules for all is your opinion,
Yes.
right?
Yeah, that's a good sum up, Amy.
Okay.
Exactly.
So I guess the crux of your essay is that it's hypocritical for bosses. It's like a do as I say, not as I do attitude. So they're demanding their employees return to the office, but then they don't live there or they're staying at home. So, because your essay outlines, CEOs who live far away. So it's just not going to work for business in the future, the do as I say, not as I do policy.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're seeing it change overall within our culture of a greater focus on inequity. And between that and just people really getting used to working from home and having more balance in their life, not having that grueling hour commute to the office and trying to just get things done on the weekend. Between those two things, I think that CEOs really do need to look at how they can be more flexible with their workers. The studies show there's not a change in productivity, so why wouldn't you try to make that change? There's definitely some speculation that these changes are to drive attrition, right? That these companies need to tighten their belts and are looking to remove people through these policies. And it'll be really curious to see over the next couple months whether that was achieved or not. There's a anonymous tech app called Blind in which there's a lot of chatter right now on people speculating that these tech companies did not get the attrition that they hope for with these return to work policies, and so that layoffs may be coming. But again, that's speculation.
Right. So instead of laying, they're trying to improve their bottom line. So instead of laying off a bunch of people, they were like, everyone has to come to the office full time. Surely everyone will hate that. Let's then they'll all quit, right? Is that, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you can, like, if you troll LinkedIn right now, you can see some examples of people who work at these companies who are just this week saying, okay, I'm out of the job. I'm looking for new work. And they typically are based in other places than where their employer is, which makes me think that it is related to this issue.
Yeah, and but it'll take a few months because some people will do the long commute while they're looking for another job, right? So that they're not unemployed. So it'll probably
Yeah.
we won't know exactly what happens for at least 3 months or however it longs to do a job search, right?
Yeah, that would be the smart thing to do for sure.
All right. Well, we've been talking with writer Rachel Greenlee, who wrote an essay for the New York Times that chronicled how remote work exemplifies the economic divide between workers and their bosses. Thank you, Rachel, for joining us for All Sides today.
Thanks for having me, Amy.
And this is All Sides with Amy Jurevich on 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us.